Open your Bible with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We're continuing our study of the series of lessons about the love that's talked about in this passage. Begin reading with me in verse 1. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. It does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own, is not provoked, and does not take into account wrong suffered. It does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. You know, as we read these words, it becomes evident to us that the love of this text is more action and less emotion. It demonstrates itself in concrete behaviors, both positive and negative. And the actions that are described here are not all the ways, I think, that love is evident or manifests itself, but these are clearly demonstrative of the way that love acts or the characteristic traits that love would possess. And like these Corinthians, our love for one another needs to be perfected. Not perfect, but perfected. Without it, we're nothing more than a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal, Paul says. Now, in our previous lessons, we've worked through verses 4, 5, and 6. And in this lesson, I want to focus attention with you on what is said here in verse 7. So verse 7 says, love bears all things. Well, what does that mean? Well, first of all, it implies that love has something to bear up under. That there is difficulty that love experiences. And so the word that is translated here literally means to cover. You might compare what is said here with what's said in 1 Peter chapter 4 verse 8, although it is a different word. 1 Peter chapter 4 verse 8 says, love covers a multitude of sins. And as applied to this passage, it would mean that love is able to bear up under when someone sins against them. Or sins against them multiple times. Or when we experience the great tragedies of life. So the word here means to cover. Means to protect or preserve something by covering it. We might say that friendships are protected when violations are covered. The word means to keep something off which threatens. So if sin or a violation threatens a relationship, then the idea here is that love keeps that off. Sometimes it's translated with the English word endure. So in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 1 and verse 5, carries the idea of enduring things. And of course, the idea of enduring it implies that there's something to be borne up under or to be endured. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 12, Paul said, we endure all things so that we will cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. In that context, what he's talking about, how that he did not take wages from the Corinthians as he was preaching to them. And he did not use all of his liberties in order to be free from some kind of responsibility that they might perceive of obligation to him. And so he's trying to remove anything or to cover anything that might be a hindrance to the cause of Christ as it does its work in their hearts. And yet, at the same time, as you look at the Corinthians and the epistle of 1 Corinthians, they seem to be asserting their rights in areas of liberty. And we read about that, of course, in chapter 8, as they are some eating meat sacrificed to idols and causing a stumbling block for others. And so Paul reasons that although he had the right to reap material things from them, he did not do that. He did not exercise that right. Instead, he endured so that he would not cause any hindrance to the gospel of Christ for them. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not very prone to enduring things, are we? We like things to be convenient and pleasant to us. And we want other people to be pleasant to us. We do not want to have someone that is angry with us to sin against us or to violate us in any way. And this passage says that love is able to take that. And so Paul demonstrated his love to them by not taking wages from them, even robbing other churches, he said. But now they're failing to demonstrate love to their brethren. He says, though I am free from all men, I've made myself a slave to all so that I might win the more. Ladies and gentlemen, are you willing to love to the point of subjecting your rights to others? That is, not getting your way, not getting what is rightfully yours in order to be one that is not standing in the way in the progress of the gospel, but demonstrating love. So these Christians had failed to demonstrate love to one another. As a matter of fact, in chapter 6, they're actually taking each other to law. And Paul says that before unrighteous judges. And he says, why not rather be defrauded? Why not rather be wronged? You see, that's what love takes and bears up under. And yet, in our society, we are so bent on demanding our rights. But you see, what love is it endures the restrictions of freedom for the benefit of others. Are you willing to make yourself a slave to the others like he said he was? The love of Christianity is not about what you can get, but it's about what you can give. Are you passing by on the other side when you should be feeling compassion and bandaging up wounds? Are you laying up treasures for yourself when you should be rich toward God, rich in good works, generous and ready to share? You know, Paul used a phrase in the book of Ephesians that is quite poignant. He said, you did not learn Christ in this way. The cross teaches self-sacrificial service. And that's the love that's characteristic of this passage. It involves self-sacrifice. It involves restricting freedom for the benefit of the other. It involves giving up for self in order to be of benefit to the other. Somehow or the other, maybe it's just in our society. It's like we've transformed Christianity and we think that it is a religion of convenience. Ladies and gentlemen, Christianity is not about our convenience and not about what pleases us. It is about the service that we can give not only to the Lord but also to other people. And that's what the love is in this text. And that's what Paul is calling on these Corinthians to perfect. And that's what he's calling on us to perfect within ourselves. You know, in this recent week, we've observed what happened in San Jose, California. In San Jose, a victim in that shooting, one that was killed in the shooting, was said by his family to have saved his co-worker by helping her hide from the gunman. And then continuing to warn other people so that they might escape death. But of course, he was killed. How many of us would demand our right? I have the right in this situation to hide myself, to protect my own life. Would we be like those who passed by on the other side as this San Jose Samaritan loves to the giving of his life? You know, sometimes in the Lord's body, we are unwilling to make the least sacrifice for the other. And congregations divide over the least things. And Christians are alienated from each other over the least things. I'll tell you this, that if I'm understanding this passage correctly, it is a mark of a lack of love. Why is it that we cannot embrace someone with whom we have a disagreement over some kind of opinion? Why is it we have this hard problem of embracing each other when we have political differences of opinion? Is that the love that's characterized in this text? When we come across, it's got to be my way or get out. That's not the love that's talked about here that I'm reading about. This love bears all things. It covers difficulties and challenges. And it is the cement that holds relationships together. But the text goes on to say that love not only bears all things, it believes all things. The word that is translated here, believes, is a word in the original language that means to be persuaded of a thing, and therefore to be able to place confidence or trust in it. Now, I think that this whole concept here in this passage of love involves particularly relationships, and so love believes all things. It's not saying that a person who loves believes everything that they hear. That's naivety. Maybe even foolishness. But this love is a love that is not characterized by being suspicious of everybody, of being hesitant and withholding their confidence or their trust in one. So this love trusts in other people. It sees others as generally good-willed instead of suspecting them. It tends to look for and see the best. When we love, we expect good things, even when appearances might suggest something else. I came across this comment in Robertson and Plummer. They said, when love has no evidence, it believes the best. When the evidence is adverse, it hopes for the best. And when hopes are repeatedly disappointed, it courageously waits. That's love. Love believes all things. Places confidence, trust in others instead of viewing them with suspicion. And then the text says, love hopes all things. The word that is translated here, hope, elpizo, acts with positive expectation. In John chapter 5 and verse 45, it speaks of Jews having set their hope on Moses. Paul wrote of having set his hope on God's deliverance in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10. And in Romans chapter 15 and verse 12, we have our hope in Christ and in our relationships with one another. Love has positive expectations. Do you see good things in people? Is that the perspective that you take? That's love. That's love. And so love acts when it sees weakness in somebody else instead of being critical and criticizing. Love works to strengthen the weak. When it sees immaturity in another, instead of criticizing and challenging, love works to bring healing, instruction, and growth. So love hopes for good things. It acts to strengthen the weak and to bring healing because it recognizes the significance of hope. This love that's talked about here is very positive, isn't it? Understand that hope is the reason why Christ died for us. Why would He die for someone that was, shall we say, hopeless? And you say, well, Paul describes us as sinful and hopeless and says that Christ died for us anyway. Yes, that's true. I'll tell you something, there's not really any reason to die for someone that you don't expect anything from, expect anything out of, that's useless. Why would someone die for that? Well, we were helpless, that's right, that we couldn't do anything, but Christ saw something in us that was hopeful, and so He gave His life. This is the love that's being described in this text. Love hopes all things. Not everybody responds positively to the love that Christ has, but he sees something. He sees some potential, and therefore sacrifices himself for us. In Hebrews chapter 12, it talks about how that God disciplines those whom He loves. Well, why would you want to discipline somebody that's bullheaded and going the wrong direction? Well, to bring them back around and to see and to understand that there is some potential here, and you want to develop that potential and bring the kind of healing and the strength that's going to, you know, one of the things that's so impressive to me, that God would take sinful people like we are, sacrifice Himself for us, and then put us in the position of taking that message of hopefulness to other people. Us who are unworthy, who are like all the other people in the world before, sinful and marred, and yet He has transformed us and seen something in us and is now asking us to see something in the other people, to go and love them like He has loved us. What a positive expectation. Looking forward to a positive future. Love looks toward a positive future with hope, and so it invests in it. But then the text goes on to say that love endures all things. Now the word that's translated here is different than the word that's translated in the first part of this verse, bears all things. This word denotes bearing up under suffering. Now notice that I'm using the terms almost synonymously. I'm talking about bearing up, I'm talking about enduring, and yet that's the very definition of the two terms that's used here. Even though it's a different word in verse 7 that talks about bearing up, and then in the last portion of verse 7, enduring all things, there are similar concepts and overlapping concepts, I think. So this passage denotes bearing up under suffering. The word carries the idea of being patiently courageous. Those people in Hebrews chapter 10, in verses 32 and following, are said to have need of endurance. And it indicates that they had bared up under difficulty and that they'd even had their property seized and they had accepted that joyfully. Did we do that? Have our property seized and be able to bear up under that, to be able to endure that kind of thing? In other words, what they had done is they had taken the difficulty, the injustice, and they had ridden it out. recognizing that the way of the Lord was going to triumph in the end, and all of the actions and the sacrifices that they made here in this life were going to be nothing by comparison to what they were going to receive. And so again, here in this text, there is this assumption that there's going to be difficulty and challenges. And so love, when it faces these, evidences itself in bearing up and believing in and hoping and standing fast all the way to the end. This love that endures is a love that does not abandon. You ever notice the different behaviors of people when difficulties arise? Maybe it's your difficulties, or maybe it's a difficulty in their family or whatever, and it's like when they see a difficulty arising, they're headed in the other direction. If the difficulty is south, they head to the north. If the difficulty is to the west, they head to the east. They just escape. What I'm understanding about this love is when it faces difficulty, it stays in there. It doesn't run away. It doesn't give up. It takes the difficulty, and it doesn't quit. And I think that that's what the writer in Hebrews is calling on those people to do when he talks about this faith that is enduring, and cites all those examples in Hebrews chapter 11 of people who endured great difficulty. And then he draws it to a summary in chapter 12 as he says, look to Christ, the author and the perfecter of your faith, and look what he endured. He says, you've not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. And now the ideas in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 20, be faithful until death, begin to take on real meaning, don't they? It stick in all the way to the end. You know, it's easy for us to start projects. It might be even easy for us to start Christianity. But it's getting to the end that can sometimes be the challenge. Well, I've been baptized. Well, that's the beginning. A good beginning, a good start. But now getting to the end. You know what? In Solomon's writings in the book of Ecclesiastes, he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. I think sometimes what we do is we say, oh, we need to preach that to children. Well, that's all well and good. Yes, we do. Well, let me throw this out to you. We need to begin our relationship with the Lord early on. And then we need to be faithful until death. So it is a good thing to remember our Creator in the days of our youth before we get to the end. Because I'm telling you, before you get to the end, there are going to be challenges. Challenges at the beginning you cannot comprehend, nor even think about. But what this love does is it stays all the way to the end. It endures all things. It doesn't quit. So love bears up under difficult circumstances. Love works to trust people, to believe in them and expect good things from them. It is hopeful and it endures all things. That is, it takes the suffering and the difficulty and the challenges, and it doesn't withdraw. It doesn't give up and it doesn't quit. You see what Jesus did all the way to the cross and the sacrifice of himself for our benefit. Here's the model of love that Paul calls on these Corinthians to exhibit and to take action. It's not just a mere emotion. It involves a powerful decision to accept the difficulties, accept the challenges, accept the injustices, and continue right on all the way to the end. The opportunity is yours this morning. If you're willing to make that kind of commitment to the Lord, recognize that He's made that kind of commitment to you. That He loves you. That He invites you to accept his forgiveness. And he promises that he has hope for you and is looking forward to a magnificent future for you. Would you participate in it? And then would you love like he has loved? Not just of yourself, but would you love others the way that he has loved you? By this, men know the disciples of Jesus Christ. Would you follow these truths and love like Jesus loved? If you would you make the commitment this morning to do just that? If you have a need, won't you come as together we stand as we sing?